You're jumping 2 feet in into the unknown. New city, new company, new industry for me. That was my first foray into working for a software company. And I look back and I can't believe we did it.
Yeah.
But in some ways, it was absolutely the best decision ever because it took me on this whole different path. And you wonder, what would the other path have been? This one has been incredible, and yeah. I'm so glad we did it. But it was a hard decision. It was a hard thing to do.
Welcome to the Masterstroke Podcast with Monica Enid and Sejo Petruzak. Conversations with founders, CEOs, and visionary leaders in technology and beyond.
You also had a really big decision when you left your companies, you were at Intel and IBM, and you chose to leave,
yeah.
making a really hard decision that ended up, you know, turning into the best decision
Absolutely.
Of your life.
Absolutely. And, you know, some of it, I think, was at the time I didn't know what was in store. But some of it was very deliberate. It was, I know I've got a good thing at IBM, or I know I've got a good thing at Intel, but I really want to pursue something else and see where it goes. And I think it's a little bit like, you know, your story of active. It's I'm excited about what I'm running towards, not necessarily running away from anything. And if something can get that motivating, then you can be bold and take the risk. And I think while it's hard and you have to suppress, like I've learned that over time, you have those feelings of uncertainty and feelings of, I guess it's just fear. It's just fear. It's fear. Will you fail? Fear. Will it be awful? Will you ever get a good job again? Will you ever be, you know, all of those things. And I think you have to feel the feeling
yeah.
because they are very real feelings yeah. and you can't skip them. You actually have to feel the feelings and let yourself feel the feelings, but then decide, okay, I know that I'm feeling fear, but I'm going to lean into it and I'm going to do it anyway. And that's the key. And I think it's that, like you said, habit of kind of being someone who's decided to feel the fear, let it sit there for a little while, and then decide to do it anyway has made my personal life better, has made my professional life better. It's made my physical health and mental health better. So, you know, I don't regret it. And I do think it is the thing that sets people apart. Well, Sejo, we've talked about doing lots of hard things, and I know you've done many hard things. You are frequently in boardrooms and have been the CEO yep. of large tech companies. And as a woman of color, as a minority, I think that is quite scary to most people. And I'm sure it was somewhat scary to you, but I still have had these conversations where and seen you and thought, wow, I don't think she's as scared as I don't want to call you abnormal, but no, you don't seem as scared as normal people do. And I wonder, like, do you think that's natural? Like it came from, like, do you think your brain is wired differently? Or do you think it's something in your yeah. upbringing? Or what do you think?
You know, you never know what you do that's different than other people. You put me on a roller coaster and I'm fearful, right? I mean, but you put me in a boardroom surrounded by anybody and or to speak in front of thousands of people and I'm not fearful. You know, I is it nature? I don't know. Is it nurture? Maybe. Maybe it's, you know, part of how I grew up. My sister reminded me just the other day that, you know, she said she literally said these words to me. I was the CEO of our house from the time I was 10 years old. Now I had parents who very much, I don't know, they were maybe because we were immigrants and maybe because I have a sort of booming personality. I really felt like, I had to make decisions and I had parents who encouraged that from me. And I also had, you know, unique upbringing in certain ways where, you know, we had, my mom was sick and I had to sort of take care of the family from my teenage years in many ways. I think maybe that made me grow up really young and made me realize that, you know, all of the things that sometimes you're fearful of are not necessarily things we should be fearful of. And that maybe, you know, you've got to just face things head on and move forward with them and drive fast and drive hard and be confident in yourself. And yeah, we'll make mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes and you look back and you learn from them. So I don't know. Maybe I just look at things and say they're not as big of a deal as people might otherwise think they are, or that people, you know, I don't know. I, you know, it's so funny because you have to look at that and say, why is it that I act a certain way? And you actually brought up to me and said, I act this way and asked me, well, aren't you scared when you do this? Or don't you have fear of this? And I was like, you know, I really don't. And I think if you can go at anything and just say, what's the worst that can happen? Nothing really. You know, you walk into a room, you have to speak and you prepare, obviously, and you're thinking about things in advance to make sure that you're ready. And if you're speaking at a conference or you're whatever it is that you're doing, but then when you just got to go for it.
Yeah.
And that's part of, for some people, it's really hard. For some people, it's still hard, but it's less hard. And again, you know, yes, you have that innate personality and mindset of it. But then on top of that, you also make it a habit to focus on those things that, you know, are hard and push forward on them.
I love listening to you try to puzzle through this, like, what is it about me and how did I end up this way? You know, I don't know if you've ever seen Alex Honnold. He's the rock climbing guy that climbed, you know, Yosemite or whatever with no ropes or whatever. And they put that guy.
Yes, yes.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yes, yes. I know who you're talking about.
So they put that guy under an fMRI machine and they showed him pictures of scary things that normal humans, their fear center would light up in their brain. And that dude, he has no fear center. Like the lights don't fire in his brain, in his fear center. And when I've gotten to know you, I've thought, I wonder if you have that and you don't have that fear center.
Yeah, you know, and that goes back to some of it could be nature and the mindset, but I really believe a lot of it is what we've been talking about, which is creating that habit of just doing something that maybe was a little bit challenging or, you know, the relativity of challenge and then just keep doing it.
Well, it sounds like you had to adopt that at a pretty young age. You had a lot of responsibility at a really young age and you started shouldering it, which I'm sorry that happened to you, but I do think it's a big part of making you who you are. I also wonder if growing up with just a sister and no brothers affected you. I know that I have, when I was looking at high schools for my daughter and I thought about an all-girls school because I had read all these articles about how girls from all-girls schools actually grow up more confident in the world around men than they do if they go to a co-educational high school. And I wonder if during those formative years, you don't learn the same sort of bad habits that a lot of girls and women learn about being intimidated. There's different kinds of hard things. There's this category of like, you're at the precipice, you know, or a road diverged in two and you can pick one road or the other road. And those are hard choices, right? And then the other category is this like habit of like, I get up every day and I exercise or I meditate or I, you know, I do these things that they might not feel easy to do in the moment, but I get into the habit and I get into the habit of not letting fear overcome and just, or not letting this sort of avoidance of hardness things. And those are habits. I agree. But I think when you have this category one, which is like a road diverged in, I don't know what that poem is, but whatever, two roads diverged or whatever. And you got to go, okay, what, I could do this or I could do that. One of the processes that's helped me a lot is thinking through what is the upside? What is the upside if I do this? Like, what's the best case scenario? And then what is the worst case scenario? And right. am I more excited about the upside? Is there an asymmetry in the return and the risk? Is, you know, if I start my own company, leave this comfortable big company job, what is the upside potential? And then if I fail, what is the downside potential? And if there's some asymmetry right. there of like, I'm not going to end up homeless under a bridge because I could probably still be marketable and get a job. It's like, okay, the downside potential is not that bad. It's feeling a lot of shame probably around failure. And it's probably feeling like people might think less of me. My family might be disappointed or feel less of me, you know, whatever, all those feelings that you have. And then the upside is you might create this amazing thing and you might be crazy successful. And, you know, like the process of entrepreneurship has given me so much rewards because I have, you know, I had, when we had our first liquidity event, I had people tell me that they bought their first homes. I had people
I'm sure you know that. You made that happen because of that decision that you made ultimately led to the impact for so many of your employees.
Oh, I had people in their mid-20s telling me they bought an engagement ring with the liquidity money from the event, or they put down a house, and that they never thought, or they paid off all their student loans earlier than they thought they would ever do. And their whole prospect of their future mindset changed because their ability to do those things. And, you know, you go, okay, what's the upside? That's the upside. Creating a lot of amazing careers and creating wealth for investors and for employees. And then what's the downside is like, oh, can I get over the fact that people might think I failed? Well, truthfully, most people think I was going to fail anyway, because I don't think most people think, well, the odds are
against. Well, most entrepreneurial startups do fail, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you're part of the minority that actually succeed and actually get to that level. It's interesting. The other thing is that you're right. You had a great education and a great background, and you had it failed, you could go to another job and go back to what you were, but then you'd always wonder, what if?
Right. Exactly. Would you kick yourself for not trying? Right. Would you be
for not
mad
trying
at yourself?
The hard thing?
Exactly. Yeah. And that
exactly.
you have to
That's
think
interesting.
That absolutely through.
So can I ask a question? So sometimes hard things are maybe not something you choose to do in some ways, and they're almost things that you're told to do, right? So when you, I know the story of when you first had a baby and you had to suddenly go back into the office 5 days after you had a baby. Talk a little bit about that. In some ways, it's a choice. I guess you could have said no, but it would have impact in certain ways. But it is a hard thing, right? I mean, it's hard because you have to, you want to be home with your baby. Maybe you don't feel great and, you know, you're still recovering. But talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, no.
Maybe tell us a story about it.
That was definitely one of the hardest things. You and I've talked, and I think we've all read about the motherhood tax. But I was doing really well in my career when I first was pregnant with my oldest son. I had him, and literally 4 days postpartum, 4 days after he was born, I'd just gotten home from the hospital like a day before. I'd just gotten home from the hospital, and my boss from work called me and said that there was this annual performance review process and that no one was going to represent the employees that reported to me if I didn't, and their accomplishments for the year, if I didn't come in. My son was born in January. And so it was the whole previous year's accomplishments wouldn't be represented for my team unless I physically came in. And this was, you know, before we didn't have Zoom.
This is before Zoom yeah. and all that stuff. You were in the office every day.
I think I possibly had a dial-up modem back then. I know we're dating ourselves, but I think I had a dial-up modem at home where I could download text emails from work. But no, yeah, there was no choice. It was like, if they get represented and they don't get their portion of the raise pool and their promotions, you have to be there. And I remember thinking, I don't even think I can zip my pants, much less get myself out of this house and into the office. But I felt like I really did not have a choice. He was not giving me a choice. And so I went in and I sat through the meeting, and the meeting went way longer, as those meetings always do, because there's a lot of arguing and contention about who's better than whom, who deserves what raise and allocation. So it was one of those really contentious meetings. And I remember a couple hours into the meeting, I was talking and I didn't even look down, but my shirt had milk on it. I put a jacket on, came back into the room with the jacket, and tried to keep going with the meeting. I did my best, but it was incredibly hard. And I got home, and you know, within a few days, his boss, so now my boss's boss, called me and told me that they were going to reorg my group away from me, and that he thought that I should relax and enjoy my maternity leave and not worry. And I had spent 7 years at that company building up my career and getting to that point where I managed that team and had a lot of responsibility. And it really...
I can see you're getting a little emotional even now thinking about it from 25 years ago. I mean,
it
makes a big impact.
Exactly. It's like, oh, I can go 25 years and know that everything's fine. Obviously, it worked out. It probably worked out in my favor that I, you know, long-term didn't stay in a big company and I long-term became entrepreneurial. But how did I feel at that moment? It actually sent me into a postpartum depression. My identity was that accomplished work person. And you know, that lesson of like wrapping your identity around your work
is
something. And by the way, yes, that was painful and that was hard. And getting through that sort of postpartum period, I think, was incredibly hard. But I think you and I have talked about the fact that this year I sold the company that I founded. And you want to talk about somebody's identity being wrapped up in, like, I know moms get wrapped up in their kids and their kids' accomplishments. That company was my baby. Like,
that's
right.
I don't
want to say more so than my two actual babies, because I don't think it's more so, but in a different way, in a way of like who I thought of myself as being. And I think because it was the second time around of like realizing my identity is wrapped up in this thing and this is not healthy and it's not sustainable and it can't go on forever. So I'm going to have to do the inside work required. I mean, there's a lot of inside work of detangling your self-esteem, like from that thing.
From the company.
Like, are you, as Monica is approved? I don't know. No, Monica is so many things and Zapproved is one of the things. And Monica has value in all kinds of ways. And
but by Zapproved the way, Zapproved is your company that you founded 15 years ago. And for 15 years, Zapproved was such a big, huge part of your life. And then here you're selling it and no longer going to be the CEO of it.
Yeah.
That's a hard decision to decide to sell it too, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah. Well, once you take outside investors, the minute you take outside money, you cannot make your investors' money back by making a profit. You have to make money by growing the company and selling it. That's the amount of the risk that they take of putting money into your company. You know, the liquidity event is a foregone conclusion, but it is like... there's like the logical part of like, I know I made the choice to take investment money and I know I'm going to have to sell this company. And then there's the emotional, like I understand that this is going to happen, but how do I deal with this happening? And to be honest, I think because the second time around, I knew that my self-esteem and I knew my identity was wrapped up in it. And I knew I really had to work through it so that I wasn't just like in a fetal position on the ground for 2 days, not days and weeks, not willing to go outside. Because I think the first time I did lay in a fetal position and refused to get dressed and refused to go to the grocery store and all of those stupid things because I couldn't.
After when you found out that first time, after when you found out that your team was being taken away from you, a team that you had built over 7 years and all of that.
I don't want anybody to ask me how I'm doing or I, you know, I was just.
How work is because then you might.
Or just I heard you
break down in front of them.
Your job is changing. Or I didn't even, I kept thinking, what if someone asks me that question? What will I even say? And even that shame of like, and I know now that it's shame. I don't think then I had that word shame for what I was feeling, but I now know it was shame. But I think that just, it overwhelmed and welled up and I didn't know how to deal with it.
But by the way, it's so amazing. I mean, it isn't shameful. I mean, you know, it's what's shameful is how it was done to you when you were on maternity leave. You should never have felt that it was a bad reflection on you. I mean, but you didn't know that back then.
I think you're right, but I think we feel shame about all kinds of things that are not shameful. That we shouldn't feel shame about. Like, I mean, I think there are, I mean, have you thought about times where maybe you felt like, I don't know, bad, but it wasn't really, you later look back and you go, that wasn't my fault. I shouldn't have felt that way, but I did feel that way.
I actually don't know. You know, this goes back to maybe I'm,
your brain.
You know, where you said I'm abnormal. I don't know. You know, I mean, I've gone through hard things, but I guess maybe I'm less emotional.
Yeah,
I'm not. I don't really have huge highs and huge lows. Maybe I'm just a little bit more.
Yeah,
of the. And you know, you and I are so different, yet we're such good friends.
I agree.
And we both accomplished lots of different things, but we have very different personalities in many ways. And I guess that's also great for people to hear about too, which is you can be very different. There's not one set mold that makes a leader, right? Or that makes someone, you know, become a CEO or anything like that. You can be very different.
I agree. I think you're even keeled. I used to think, oh, these people who are so even keeled. I'm not even keeled. I'm not. I've become more even keeled over time, but I'm not. I am, what I love about the startup, the entrepreneurial journey, the highs are really high. The lows are really low. Well, thank you so much, Sejal. And thank you to our executive producer, Georgiana Moreland.